Lisa and Shoshana are not experts at anything except maybe living their own lives. And even that, well, get a therapist. We all need therapy. Even me. Kidding.
Really nice.
Actually, not bad.
Yep. I think we're ready to release our album of just that song over and over again.
Well, there'll be different. There'll be a mix of it. There'll be like a lot of a dance club version.
Yes. And EP version.
Then when we sell it to TikTok and it's just massive.
Yeah. Like, there's the trap version of it where it's just very dancey.
And trappy. Yeah. And then people will dance and they'll always have that dance that they do with their dad.
Yeah.
And the dad's funny and the other person, the child is like really good at it, but nobody cares how good you are because they want to look at dad do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then dogs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be good.
Yep.
Well, hi.
Oh, hey.
Hey. We were having a heavy conversation this morning.
We really were.
Yeah. Talking about intuition.
Talking about worthiness.
Oh, God. Yes. And it's kind of giving ourselves, each other, an update on where we are in our in our healing from our breakups.
It's like, where have you been? And I find that I hate looking back because it sometimes depresses me that I put myself through it or that I allowed myself to stay so long in it.
Yeah.
As a kid, the things I did, as a high schooler, as a in my marriage, all the things I stayed in, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that now I'm 53, spoiler alert.
What?
And that 53, it's like I still find myself leaving my parents' house going, why did I allow that? Or like, and it's all about not being worthy.
It's amazing that I think about my mom at this age, and I thought, wow, she's 53. She must really have her shit together. She's figured out so much. Now I'm that age, and I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
I don't have anything figured out. I'm still trying to stay above water.
What I'm trying to encourage myself to do is look back at how far I've come rather than be disappointed at the decisions I made, to look back and say, that was me then, and look at how far I've come now. Like, I wouldn't make those exact mistakes. Yes, there are some that I fall back into. It's a knee jerk. I spent my whole life learning one way, and I'm trying to change that now.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I can look back and see all this shit that I did and get down on myself, or I can say, fuck, I'm doing so much better now.
Yeah. Yeah. I was saying to you, I look back at myself 10 years ago and I was still so, you know, I was still such a victim.
Mm-hmm.
I don't use that word to like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that word because there are real people who are victims of something, but I was deeply influenced and a subject of the male gaze.
Mm-hmm.
And it influenced decisions that I made about myself, where to put my attention. And that's what 10 years has done. I no longer consider that anymore. And part of that is that, I guess, please reach out and tell me whether you feel this or not. Women who are listening to this, specifically women, it was like 50 was a magical threshold that I crossed over where I no longer felt on the market. Like, I was 50, and the mere fact of being that number meant I was not a high value person anymore in terms of sexuality, which is a limitation I recognize that I put on myself, but it's so emblematic of how I have lived my life.
But yes, you put it on yourself, but you put it on yourself because that's the patriarchy. I mean, you didn't do that by yourself. I think that we all do that. You know, you've seen the Amy Schumer sketch that she's out of her fuckable years or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I think
last fuckable years.
Yeah, her last fuckable years. But I think Like, talk about how when you were at Second City.
Oh, yeah. I was saying that for a long time, I judged my value based on the cast I was in and how I was seen by the other men in the cast.
Mm-hmm.
That they were the funny ones. And so being acceptable to them and being funny to them and them wanting to work with me or think that I was, you know, creative and smart and funny, that was my value. That was where I derived my value. And then when I was in my mid-30s, I decided I had a great job in Chicago on main stage at Second City. And I decided that I was going to leave that job, even though I'd fought so hard to get to it. I was going to leave that job and I was going to come back to Toronto with the man who became, you know, my partner. And it was like I had, that's as far as I can go in that direction. I know that's not how I felt entirely.
Mm-hmm.
It's also feeling the male gaze in other ways. Like, it was a very drunken in the dark, looking at a stage, feeling free to call things out way that I didn't like engaging with it.
Yeah.
And when I tried to imagine moving to Los Angeles or pursuing my career, it was always having to fight through that layer of the male gaze that was just like, oh, I never want to do this. I don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm averse. But I came back to Toronto and then, you know, my relationship got into, there was a betrayal and I was so deeply affected by it. And I thought, well, I've left this male approval to come back for this male approval and I'm left with nothing now.
And talk about how it lowered your value each time. Like, it was like the betrayal lowered your value. Because I think that for me too, like, I had a certain value because I was with somebody who was stereotypically good looking.
Mm.
So I was with somebody. So I always thought, well, my value is low because I'm little and I'm round and, you know, I come across as not the stereotypical sexy person. So, you know, when I was doing on camera, I was a nurse, a secretary, you know, the non-sexual being on camera.
Right.
And I was never seen in a sexual way. And I saw myself that way. Like, I could only see myself through the male gaze, right? And so I was not sexy in any way. And when I started dating the person that I eventually married, it was because he was stereotypically handsome, I leveled up. It
yeah.
was like I, all of a sudden, even men who would never have seen me as sexy, I felt sexier because he thought I was sexy.
Right. So he gave you an entrance to the party, a ticket to the party.
That's it.
To the ball.
Yeah. And so my value, I became of higher value and higher value even to women because women would look, I had women, female friends who'd be like, wow, he's so handsome, in shock, you know, that I could get that. And so it meant that whatever I had was special because I was able to get somebody who was handsome. And I look at that in terms of my home life as a child. Like, I think my dad, he was, you know, cheating on my mom the whole time. I didn't know that, but he was very much like, that woman's good looking, that woman's good looking, when we'd look at,
yeah.
you know, watch movies and stuff and Lauren Bacall and all that stuff. And I was never like the pretty one, the cute one. He never spoke to me like that.
Sorry to interrupt, but when your dad would say things like that, like, oh, Lauren Bacall, she's so beautiful, would you instantly measure the distance between yourself and Lauren Bacall?
Yes.
Always.
Always.
I did that too.
I always did it. And I think that's why I became so into Shirley Temple, because she was a child. There was no way she could be sexy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I know that listening to my dad talk about all these women, Ingrid Bergman, Lauren Bacall, Ginger Rogers, and you know, Marilyn Monroe, I wanted him to see me as beautiful in that way and not cute like Shirley Temple, but I couldn't attain it. Whereas with my mom, I knew she just loved me.
Right.
Like, there was none of that. I mean, she did, you know, criticize my weight and so on. But I felt she criticized my weight as a in a sadness. Like, you're not going to be happy if you look like this. And she was always looking at herself in the mirror and saying, if only I could lose 20 pounds. And then she would say to me, like, oh, she would, every time I was naked in front of her, we were a very naked family, she would, like, I could see her looking at my body and going, oh, like, nervousness, her brow furrowed, like, she was worried because I looked the way I looked. And wasn't there any way? I remember her giving me an article at one point when I was in university, pear-shaped body type, you're going to have a heart attack. And I was like, I was so offended. I was so mad. And I was like, I'm going to dad's. Oh, I was so mad. And now I can look back and say she was so worried about me because she had had such a hard time with her weight. And she was this, you know, staunch feminist, right? But it didn't apply. And so the male gaze, like, I know she had to deal with it. And I had to deal with it in a sense, like, once removed from her eyes. But it's that leveling up, like, attaining a man who was handsome kind of saved me. So I didn't have to worry about my weight anymore. Like, I didn't have to worry about how I looked because I'd done that. That was done. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I think when you talk about having a man who's handsome, I remember, you know, people used to say that about my partner, that he was so handsome. Oh, my God, he's so handsome. And the thing that got me recently was that my daughter said to me, I remember thinking when I was growing up, she's still growing up, but I remember thinking when I was growing up, I have really good looking parents. Mm-hmm. Like that sort of, sorry, to, you know, that's just coming from my daughter. That's her perception of it.
But you are really.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You are incredibly sexy.
I said thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you're welcome. But that in the moment that she said that, I felt a, see, it's okay. And then I really looked at that like, what? Like, I need my daughter's approval? I'm even looking for it coming from a weird place, like,
yeah,
the child I'm trying to pull out of the
and
patriarchy.
And it's funny because recently, I'll probably cut this, but recently my son said to me, only good-looking people cheat. Mm. And I took it as such a hit that, oh, I guess I'm not good-looking. Not that I haven't cheated, which was a great thing.
Yeah.
But it was more that I wasn't good looking. Like, that was the first thing. And then we sat and talked about it. But it's really interesting how much value we hold in that. Where
is it someone's birthday or?
Oh. Kind of the opposite. We're celebrating Julia's last fuckable day.
Yes. Salud.
Sorry, did you say Julia's last fuckable day? Mm-hmm. What is that? Mm.
In every actress's life, the media decides when you finally reach the point where you're not believably fuckable anymore.
Yeah, I'm so confused by it. My sexuality is so blocked because the whole part of my sexuality is just through the male gaze. Like, I should be turned on by this person because they are stereotypically attractive. But then I'm not. And if a man or a woman makes me laugh, I'm like, it's a panty remover instantly. Like, if you can make me laugh, I'm ready to go. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
That's. So I think that's the interesting part. But in terms of leveling up and leveling down, when you were talking about the betrayal, when I found out about the betrayal with my ex, I leveled all the way down. Like, all the way down to the bottom. All of a sudden, I realized that all those years I'd been living at a false value.
You had this value.
Yeah, and I didn't.
Then suddenly,
no, it was
you
false.
Realized you were the only one who didn't know you didn't have that value.
That's it. Yeah. And then I had to know all the women that he'd been with. I had to see them. Like, I had to know. And I kept asking him, was she skinny? Was she this? Was she that? Did you laugh? Did you eat together? What did she look like? How did she dress? And it was like, what the fuck, you know? And he would tell me as if he didn't care or whatever. Who knows? Whatever. But it definitely, like, when he told me that his girlfriend of 3 years was a yoga instructor, oh, my God.
Lost your shit.
I was like, oh, her abs must be rock hard. Like,
and so there's a sense that that's what he really values, yeah. But he's got this bullshit life.
Yeah. And it was like, well, what value was I to him? And I think it was just street cred, really.
Yeah.
Like, I was street. Yeah. Can you believe that I was street cred for anyone?
Yes, I can. I can, because you're street cred for me. Yeah. Whoops. I have something to you that I have to resolve now.
Tell me.
Is like, well, I, you know, it's a relationship that I got into in the middle of, it's polyamory that I got into in the middle of my relationship when my value felt diminished by choices that my partner was making. Now I have to, I'm going to try to resolve this. And I'm completely terrified of it. And I was saying to you, I haven't got it figured out yet. And that's why I'm having a hard time.
Yeah.
But I'm realizing that I have to let myself be where I am, that I haven't got it figured out. And I'm just trying to unblock myself because I don't want to think of myself as somebody who can't broach the topic of sex because it's uncomfortable to me or it didn't go well for me or because I was betrayed and mm-hmm. because I've shut that part of my life down now. I feel instinctively that what I need to protect is my individuality
mm-hmm.
and my not aligning my life with someone else because I'm not, it doesn't feel authentic to me. I have things that I want to discover about myself. I don't want to be in a partnership, but I also don't want to feel like my best days are done and I'm just waiting it out, you know?
Well, like, I think you said it earlier this morning. You were talking about sex and how you said, I don't really want to talk about sex because it's all about the male gaze and my power. And I was like, but what if sex isn't about the male gaze? Like, I think we're at an age now, an age in the world, but also an age with each other, that our sex can be our power.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be like, hey, do I have value? Am I still sexy? Because we always joke about how, well, I'm a piece of furniture right across the street. Like, but like,
I'm actually that table that they rolled in where the VCR was on it and the TV was on top in your high school when they came in to show a movie.
Oh, yeah.
It has wheels on the bottom.
I love that
made
thing.
Of metal. That's what I am.
I want to be the thing, and then you turn it upside down so that you can see it on the, what's it called? You know,
the overhead. Yeah. You're an overhead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a long time
ago. Yeah. Together, we're great for the classroom.
But what about men? Like, who tells men when it's their last fuckable day? Honey, men don't have that day.
Never.
Well, they're fuckable forever. Like, they could be 100 and, like, nothing but white spiders coming out, but they're fuckable.
I had a sexual, what do you call it, tryst
mm-hmm.
with a guy that I met on OkCupid or one of those things. And I would have really liked to have been with women, but nobody would date me. Anyway, so I went out with this guy and it was really great. Like, I got to have sex that was actually really great. And I learned a lot. But in the end, I got really hurt.
Yeah.
And
like emotionally.
I got emotionally hurt. But what I learned from it was that I didn't understand that I was holding so much value in it and that I was disconnected from my heart, that my body and my heart were disconnected. And I wanted to do more work to enjoy sex for myself. Like, I really felt like everything I've learned about sex is like, from those early years of this is what you got to do. It's this thing where it's like, and now I do this, and now I do that. And two fingers here, one on the back, over the thing, through the shoulder.
Wow, I never got that. I never got that tutorial. The shoulder, damn it. Well, it one was, over the back, for, two here.
Again, like sex for me as a young person was about value. It was like I had to learn all the things and do all the things. And I'd watched a porn when I was like, in grade 8 at her house. I'm going to bleep that. But I watched this porn at her house and it was like teenagers and a football player, and it was all anal and blah, 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 blah. And it was like the one porn that stuck in my brain. Like, it was scalded in my brain, right? And then we played on her Yamaha organ, and we made like samba, bossa nova.
Oh, that's fun. I remember those.
Anyway, these are the two memories from yourselves. Anyway, she lived down the street. So I think in my head it was like, I've got to do that, those things, because that's all I knew. And my mom was so great. Like, she gave me all these books, Our Bodies, Ourselves, and all that stuff. But in essence, I didn't really know. Like, I didn't. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, if you want to be of value, you have to be wanted by men. And the guys didn't like me because I didn't look the way you were supposed to look. So I had to be good at the sexual deeds.
Yeah.
But my heart was totally not in it because I was just trying to be of value.
You're trying to check the box. That's, like, I can do this. I can do this.
And you know the box I'm checking.
Yeah.
Girl. Bitch. So I think that that's kind of how I – and that's what I did in my marriage. And then I got finished and I was like, okay, so that's done. And he wanted somebody else, many other somebody else's. And so now I'm just at this point where I'm like – is it the male gaze? Is it the female gaze? Where's my gaze? What do I like? Who am I?
Yeah, and when I think, it's interesting now that we're talking about this, when I think about where I was in my relationship, I started to pull away from sex. And the reason was because I couldn't, like, there was something magical about us getting together and falling for each other, falling in what I thought was love.
Mm-hmm.
That was like such a high for me because I thought I felt seen and heard on all levels, you know, like, and then when the betrayal happened, I realized there was nothing special about me.
Mm.
And it's tough to get that back. I tried. I definitely tried. But the sense of the betrayal is behind us. We're working past that. We've gone to therapy and all that. And I had never really disentangled from what it meant, you know, mm-hmm. to have left my job where I felt like a high value person to come to this value and then find out it's not actually that high. It could be you or it could be you, you know, so I got into this polyamory situation, not betraying anybody. Everybody knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, I felt like this is me expressing my sexuality, like getting mm-hmm. back my power. But then I lost my power there, too,
mm-hmm.
because I felt like there was too much having to care for people's feelings,
mm-hmm.
including my child's, who was my number one priority.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I step back and I'm not in any relationship, and it's just me and my kid, I realize how demanding that is just on its own. So, you know, what was happening there was just me exhausting myself, not coming from a place of power, just sort of reverting to...
Well, you were looking for value somewhere else.
Yeah, I was trying to get value. I was trying to recreate a feeling of power mm-hmm. that I didn't have anymore.
And I think in listening to you, it reminds me that what hurts, like, it hurts to be betrayed for sure, but what really hurts is the sadness that your old self feels. Like that girl, that little girl who gets told you're not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he cheated and yeah, this happened and yeah, he picked somebody else, blah, blah, blah. But ultimately, and so we grieve the relationship and but ultimately what we're grieving is that person, that little girl who had such high hopes.
Yeah.
That naivete, right?
You know, because I grew up in the relationship with my dad that I had where nothing was ever good enough. Like,
yeah, yeah.
His approval was fleeting. I don't think I really had those high hopes. I hoped to magic into something that would feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, magic in. I didn't know what it was. I still have the sense that I don't know what it could be. Like, I really don't.
But I think ultimately you had this relationship with your dad and you were trying to be good enough for somebody.
Yeah.
Good enough yeah. for, you know, you couldn't be good enough for him, but there's got to be somebody.
And I think that is why I am where I am now, because I know it's that I've got to be good enough for me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to involve anyone else at this point.
Yeah.
I've got my kid who I love so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I derive so much joy and satisfaction from parenting. And I've got my trying to figure out myself, you know? Just to say, all to say, I'm in this place of trying to sort it out and forgive myself and really only do the things that I really want to do and understand why I want to do them before I do them. Like,
can you?
I micromanage decisions now in some ways much more than I used to. I don't just trust everything will be okay. In some things I do, but they're like, specifically like getting on this microphone and opening up to those two or three people who are listening. Thank you, both of you. But if I'm going to go like have this conversation or I'm with this person or I'm going to even, you know, enroll in which school, I have to really think on it. What do I want? What do I need? What am I going to get from it? What is being asked of me? What, you know, like I need to really process it.
Hmm.
And I think that is 100% a product of having been through all of this.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause the working out of this issue that you're having, like the two things that come to mind for me are, it's okay to make a mistake, right?
Yep.
And it's okay to not have everything figured out.
And I really needed to hear that today when we talked about it this morning. I really needed to hear that because it flipped a switch. Like, yeah, it's going to be messy. It's okay. It's going to be messy. And I'm not going, you know, like I have to practice what I preach in where does the blame go? Is there blame? Is it blame or is it just talking out feelings? You know, like, and I feel better about it because I actually realize I am still in the middle of it. I don't have an answer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still figuring it out.
It's the anatomy of an apology, right? Yeah. It's like you read that, you think, do I feel like I want to give an apology? And then you give that apology and then you release yourself, right? We all make mistakes and we don't all have anything figured. Like, nobody has it all figured out. Nobody.
Nope.
And if
and
we, if
some
we,
apologies will be accepted and some won't.
Yeah, and that's okay. And if sometimes I think when I'm waiting to figure it out completely, all I'm doing is putting off doing it because it's never going to be figured out completely, ever. So I think for me, it's like, I got to stop looking outside for approval and stop looking outside for like the product. Did I finish it? How did it look? What was my grade? There's a workshop at Community Outwitch called Sex Magic on February 25th. Maybe I said that, February 25th. Mm-hmm. And Kiki Keskinen from Witch School of Canada is teaching and we would love for you to have it.
Let me ask you this
because
I'm going to frequently ask questions. Of this, will there be nudity?
I don't know.
Okay. Will there be live sex acts?
No.
No, God, no. We won't make you uncomfortable.
And the best is that the very next day is improv for kids.
Oh God, in the same space. Okay, so that should give you an indication of how safe it's going to be. I think it. You know, like I was. Reluctant.
Yeah.
I have to say this. I was reluctant to enroll in this workshop strictly because I'm like, done. Don't want to talk about sex. Anytime anyone brings it up, I just say, nope. like just closed. Mm. And I need to look at that. I think I need to look at that.
Yeah. I think it's not so much about taking the workshop or not. It's leaning into the feeling of wanting to close the door.
Well, I think I know that a lot of it is because I really, really want to be self-focused. Like I want to be as I've ever wanted to be. What makes me worry is other people's feelings.
But what
Because I've had such a bad experience.
What makes you think that sex is not about focusing on your feelings?
See, that's where I'm...
Because the whole time you were saying that, I was like, but that's sex. Like, if you were a man, you'd be like, I love sex because it's all about me and my feelings.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess there's some latent shame there that I haven't done it right. Like, I haven't been successful, that the big love of my life didn't work. I don't know.
You don't have to.
I don't have to.
I love you.
I love you too, and I think you're super sexy, but not in that way.
Well, then you're not going to help me with this.
Yeah. But I'm going to stand by you.
I've got this furry boat.
Yeah. I'm going to hold your coat while someone gets in the boat. Let's pull a card.
Oh, God damn it.
Right here. I've even brought my glasses.
We are pulling the Kim Kranz Alchemy deck, which we don't understand.
Neither one of us understand this deck. So because we're so at a loss, we've decided to work with it. So
well, it goes with our whole thing of not figuring it out, like going to places we don't understand and that maybe scare us.
Yeah, and listen, hey, if you've tuned into this podcast thinking that we're experts on anything, listen to our disclaimer up at the top. We don't even know what we're doing.
No, Graham Powell. We're
just trying to learn. Okay, here we go.
Totally. Oh, my God.
What number is that?
It's 51. No?
61.
Yep. That's what I said. Mm-hmm. It's 61.
61.
Or as they say in Rome, LX1.
Magnum opus, the great work. Attention, devotion, vocation. The magnum opus shimmers in the distance, promising purpose, achievement, and understanding. When will we get there? When will our efforts be recognized? Amidst pressure and expectations, we come to realize each alchemist's life is an accumulation of moments in which attention is placed upon a subject within the laboratory. The artist draws a single line. The poet scribes a single word. The rose forms a single leaf. The magnum opus card reminds us that the alchemical garden, grows from seeds tended to by devoted hands, and the grace of sun, water, and earth. You cannot force the great work. You cannot claim it or complete it. This card arrives to whisper words of encouragement. You are in the right place, the most important place for you. This is the alchemical garden. Tend to the youngest growth. Be delicate and precise.
Ponder one day at a time.
Yeah, when I was reading it, the thing I was thinking was it was such a feeling of relief, such a comforting feeling, because I thought this card is reminding me that I don't need to have all the answers.
No.
I don't need to have all the answers. I just need to be present.
It's a journey.
And show up and keep trying to do the work.
Keep going. This year is the card, the chariot is our card, and I think it is about movement. From where we were to where we are now to going forward, but like to be in the present and to just trust that we're still moving.
So just to say that again, the chariot is the card for 2023 in the, we do a little tarot math and every year there's a new card. In 2023, the card is the chariot. So let's try to embrace that, like keep moving.
Keep moving.
And that's an antidote to that stuck feeling too, is that even when you are feeling stuck is a part of the process.
Mistakes are a part of the process. Stuckness and not knowing is okay.
It's okay.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Marguerite and Melissa, fans whose names begin with M.
The letter M. Good.
So, if ever you start a cult, where do I sign up? I'm signing up, like, I want you to be my cult leader. I listened to the podcast, so obviously this is why I'm saying it. But I loved it. It was great. Thanks again for that 28 minutes or 20-some minutes or 40 minutes. I don't know. It's so good that I don't even look at the time. I just go in my office, I listen to you guys, and it's just like, now I feel better. Thanks.